Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. The first order of business will be the approval of the minutes. Representative Peterson moves approval of the minutes from the February 17th meeting. Any discussion, corrections, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have two items on our agenda today, members. The first is that we'll be following up with the governor's budget proposal. In your books, you have a complete House Education Finance Committee brochure, which the commissioner is going to walk through each page individually and explain to us all 724 changes of the document. I don't think we're really going to quite do that, but... Members, we just ask that you, and I'll repeat this later on when more members are here, that we keep the books in committee. If you want to keep them in committee, if you want to borrow them, then you can come down to speak with the committee staff and get that so people don't lose their copies or have to have staff re-put together these items. Welcome to the committee, Miss. Can you please state your name for the record?
Brenda Caselius.
Commissioner of Education. Very good. And welcome to the committee. Thank you for coming back. I know last hearing we had on Thursday, there were some questions, and I think members kind of held off a little bit. I'm not really quite sure how much questions members are going to have, but it was very nice that you made yourself available today, and we do appreciate that. Commissioner. We all know who the governor is, right?
Yes.
So, Commissioner, one of the items that came up for discussion last Thursday was all-day kindergarten, and there seemed to be a little... And maybe we could have Department of Education staff come down, because I just want to clarify this. With regards to the all-day kindergarten proposals, the narrative from MMB seemed to be a little bit different than the explanation we had in committee with regards to how people would those programs be qualified, how all-day kindergarten had to be offered. If you or the Department of Education staff could maybe just elaborate a little bit on that issue.
Sure, Mr. Chair. I don't see Tom Melcher yet, but I can certainly, I know that he gave some runs to interested folks around how that would fall out. But the way that the all-day K is that it is optional. So we've gotten a lot of questions about this, but if you want to offer an all-day K program within a school, that those children in that classroom for that all-day K would not be assessed a fee, whether you could afford or not. Currently, we fund all-day kindergarten at a 0.612 weight of the regular general ed formula. But what we're proposing in here is that we target resources to fund those students at a 1.0 weight who receive free and reduced price lunch. We believe that will provide additional dollars to school districts because of approximately 40% of our students across the state do receive free and reduced price lunch. We realize that for some school districts that have a greater affluence, that this would potentially be a barrier for them in terms of providing the all-day K because it does require that you not assess a fee. The reason we did that philosophically is because we believe all-day kindergarten is important enough in preparing students and closing opportunity gaps for children so that they can be fully prepared to engage in their elementary school experience and be successful. We have some studies, and I can share those with you as well, that support all-day kindergarten. Already we have 44% of our students across the state engaged in all-day kindergarten, 15% engaged in fee-based programming for all-day kindergarten, and several districts who have gone out for referendum to cover all-day kindergarten. So we believe there's strong support for all-day kindergarten. We believe there's strong research to support that it makes a difference in closing achievement gaps. And that's why we've suggested this as part of the governor's budget.
Thank you, Commissioner. With regards to, and again, if we want to reference staff regarding this, the grandfathering provisions of the charter school lease aid, we're currently, I believe we capped the lease aid at $1,200 per pupil, but there were previous districts that had above that. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that change proposal? Or again, if you have staff here.
I can. Okay. Mr. Chair, the reason we did that was more of an equalization and a fairness around the amount of money that is going to charters for lease aid. We anticipated there would be about 29 school districts impacted out of, I believe, the 183 charters or charter schools impacted out of the 183. But what we found was that 10 of those charter schools have already negotiated better lease arrangements and therefore aren't taking advantage of the grandfathering provisions, so that there are now 19 charter schools, who would be impacted by this. We'd be glad to support schools in helping them negotiate lease agreements in terms of charters having to renegotiate their lease agreements in order to fall in a range, you know, with that $1,200 per pupil.
Very good. Well, those are the only questions the chair has for the lovely the commissioner. Did you see the nice things I said about you on TV on Friday?
I did.
Okay, all right.
Thank you, Chair. I still hold you to that not criticizing piece. I appreciate that.
I haven't done it yet.
That's coming. So.
any other questions? Just to be clear, it's on the budget, Commissioner.
That's right. That's right.
No criticisms on the budget.
That's
so. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director, along those lines on the charter schools, do you have any know what the effects would be on those charter schools, as opposed to would any be forced to close, or where are they at?
Well, we Mr. Chair, Representative, we do have a running total of the amount of impact that would have for those 19 specific schools. We believe that they wouldn't have to close. I do believe they would have to renegotiate their lease arrangements. And if they couldn't negotiate fair lease arrangements, then they would have to either work with their local school district or others to find new facilities that fall, so that they can afford.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any further questions from members of the committee? Well, Commissioner, I think that's it. I greatly appreciate you making yourself available.
Yeah.
Hopefully this frees up a little extra time in your schedule for other things today. And again, we appreciate your accessibility and your willingness to communicate with the committee as we go forward. And do you have any closing comments or thoughts you'd like to share with the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just very appreciative of your all reviewing this, and we hope to come with the best proposal for you to consider, and then looking for your ideas as well on how we can even make it better for our kids. So thank you so much.
You bet. Well, thank you, Commissioner. Good seeing you again. Members of the public, this is a public hearing, and at this time, if members of the public or the lobbying community wish to offer thoughts, opinions, suggestions, information regarding the governor's budget proposal, we will take those at this time. Going once? Going twice? All right. So thank you again, Commissioner, and thank you, members of the Department of Education. Next item on the agenda is House File 576, Representative Kelly's bill. And Representative Kelly moves that House File 576 be recommended or pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Kelly, you have some amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have two author's amendments. The first, if we would look at 576A1 amendment.
All right. Representative Kelly moves the A1 amendment. Just briefly, can you explain the amendment for members of the committee, Representative Kelly?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. The A1 amendment simply says that we would like to pay back the SHIP dollars as soon as possible. It did not get in the original language, so what we want to do is simply pay that back as soon as we have the funds available.
Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Kelly, to your second amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the A2 amendment is the language that we heard in this committee, Representative Creasel's bill, that would basically repeal the language allowing the state to go in and borrow the funds from the school districts, so that the repealer language is the same of the bill that we passed through here.
Any discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Kelly, I believe the bill is currently in the form that you wish. Please proceed with your testimony.
And thank you again, Mr. Chair and members. Members, we know what's coming down the road, and shortly we'll all be in the next couple of weeks getting target numbers. We'll be back here looking at the budget as we've received our small handbooks on the budget. We understand it's a great task. So what we have going forward, I guess in my opinion, I believe the governor's budget plan had an important piece to it, and I would agree with it, and that's making the shift, the 70-30 shift, continue on into this biennium. In speaking to many of the districts around, not only in the school districts, not only in my own district, but around the state, certainly one opinion was resounding above the rest. It was, we understand the situation we're in. We would much rather have the shift of the dollars as opposed to reductions. And that is wildly clear, like I say, among all of the districts. So I would propose the shift in this biennium of the 70-30. And Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, I did ask Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom to briefly walk through what we're looking at so that we're all on the same page here.
Sure. Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair and members, I just wanted to give you a little bit of background information. You just received two shift-related documents that were just passed out. The first is a fairly detailed explanation of the shifts entitled State Education Funding Accounting Shifts. And that's got kind of a description of how shifts work, which shifts we use in Minnesota, and kind of the magnitude of what they are and the history of their use over the last 10 years or so. And then there's also this chart that was handed out that try and give you a graphical kind of description of what happens when funding is shifted, payments are shifted to school districts. And basically, if you remember from our introduction, school districts are paid, or school districts account for their revenue on an accrual basis, and the state makes appropriations to districts and accounts. State accounting system is a cash system. What that means is that school districts count for a fiscal year all of the revenue that they're due to receive in that fiscal year, regardless of which year they actually get it in. The state, on the other hand, only counts as obligations the appropriation makes in a fiscal year, whether they're tied to the current fiscal year, a past fiscal year, or a future fiscal year. And so that system allows the state to shift payments between fiscal years and create one-time state savings in the general fund on the state books, while at the same time allowing districts to have the same, to count the same amount of revenue. In other words, to not experience a revenue loss while the state is showing a revenue savings. And so under current law, we're paying school districts for the current school year we're in, fiscal year 11. We're paying school districts 70% of what they're entitled to for the current fiscal year based on our programs that we have in place. And then next year we'll pay the balance of the 30% that they're entitled to under the formulas currently in place. And that payment split is, under current law, set to go back to 90% current, 10% future in fiscal year 12. And this chart kind of gives you an idea of how we save money at the state level and how school districts don't lose money when we make these kind of changes. You can see this is an example of having a 90-10 payment split in 2009. And then converting to 80-20 for 2010 and 11, and then back to 90-10 for fiscal 2012. So you can see that in fiscal 2009, we're paying 90% of the current year payment and then 10% of the final year payment. And for fiscal 10, when we're at 90-10, we're paying 90% of the current year and then 10% of the previous fiscal year. By going to 80-20, we still pay 80% for, we pay 80% for the current year, and then that 10% block at the top is what we owed from fiscal 2009 when we only paid 90%. So that little bracket that shows the amount of savings to the state, the difference between paying that 80 plus 10 and paying 90 plus 10 is the amount we save on a one-time basis. Then in the next year, whether you're paying 90-10 or 80-20, you're picking up the previous year, so it's the same amount. And in the final year, when you switch back to 90-10, you're paying 90%. You see the first column is what would happen if we'd stayed at 90-10 the whole way. The second column is we're paying 90% of the current year and 20% of the previous year when we were paying at an 80-20 rate. So you can see that that bar goes above the 100% line because we're paying 90 plus 20. And so that difference, the little bracket that says cost to the state to repay, is equal to the savings generated in the first year that the shift was instituted. And in reality, it never looks that way because our entitlements change over time. But basically, the accumulation of savings that occurs in the big one-time chunk up front and then in smaller amounts each year as the entitlement grows, that accumulation of savings is the actual cost of repaying the shift. There's no net gain or loss in the system as a whole. What's saved is always what's paid back. And from the this is from the state's perspective. From the district's perspective, we, even if we're making those payments in a subsequent fiscal year, and they usually happen in the fall, they count those payments for the current fiscal year. So the school year we're in, they're getting 70% of their entitlement, but they're counting the other 30% that's due to come this fall. So it'll be in the next fiscal year that the check will actually get to them, but they're counting that as revenue and spending it as revenue and have budgeted as revenue for this current fiscal year. And that's kind of in a nutshell how the shift works. I won't talk about the property tax shift because the bill doesn't address that, but that's talked about in the paper that we handed out to you. I will just say for background that the savings from continuing the shift is about $1.4 billion for the biennium, and then obviously the with the amendment, the repayment that will come due in the next biennium is also $1.4 billion.
Thank you. Representative Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just one comment in regards to Mr. Chair, members, we're not sticking our heads in the sand, though, in this aspect. We understand that there will be some possible short-term borrowing costs for districts. But on the other side, we've also protected the districts with Representative Creasel's language in making sure that we don't raid those funds on the reserve side. So I think we're being prudent here. I believe a $1.4 billion reduction right now is the right way to go. So I would appreciate your support on this and would stand for any questions.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee? Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kelly, with your A1 amendment, you're incurring costs in the tails, and I'm wondering if you expect that to be a part of your budget plan, or this committee's budget plan as we move forward.
Mr. Chair and Representative Reinhart, understand that there are costs associated with the shift, and I guess from my standpoint and a budgeting standpoint, I believe it allows for the flexibility to be able to pay those back as soon as possible. If we can do it in 2014, fantastic. If we have to schedule out, similar to what the governor's plan is, I think we'd all be willing to look at that as well. But right now, I believe this is the, like I say, the prudent way to go.
Representative Bryant?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think you've answered my question, and that is, will you budget for this in the tails? Because we are incurring the cost through your language, because you haven't said when we're able to pay. You've said we will pay 90-10, so we'd have to go back and change that language. So will you budget for this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Breinert, I assume we would budget for this, yes.
Representative Downey, then Greiling. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question, I think, for Mr. Crow. So that was a great depiction of the shifts, and I the little chart on your handout is, I think, really helpful in terms of explaining it. But the interaction with local school districts and their need to borrow to manage their cash flow, could you explain that maybe in the context of the first time that we put in a shift, for example, and then does doing it again imply more cash flow borrowing, or are they, have they already borrowed all that they need to for this upcoming biennium? What's the impact initially and then ongoing to their cash flow?
Mr. Crow or Mr. Strum?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, the so if you look at the chart, for example, on when you go from fiscal 9 to fiscal 10, the second column is with the shift instituted. So without a shift, they're at 90-10, and they still have 100% of the cash in a given year, even though the payments, the cash that's coming in is tied to different fiscal years, but they have the cash coming in. So the first year we institute the shift, even though they count 100% of the revenue as revenue for that year, they only collect 90% of, or they only receive in payments from the state 90% of the cash payments that they were due to get that year. And that's what creates the initial cash flow crunch for them. And in the case of 70-30, that 80 is 10% lower, so they would be getting 10% from the previous year and then 70% from the current year, so they would only have in fiscal 10, we're actually at 73, but they only got 83% of the cash that they were expecting at the beginning of the year before the legislature took action. So it was an even bigger cash issue for them. But then you see in the subsequent year, once that shift is in place, they actually have cash flow of 100% of their 100% of an entitlement. Now, it's not 100% of what they're entitled to for a given year. It's 80% and 20%. But the cash flow issues shouldn't be as big of an issue in the next year. And now, on an individual district basis, that can change, because if their costs go up significantly from year to year for some reason, like special ed, there's going to be a catch up because they don't get that full amount of that extra special ed revenue that they were expecting until the subsequent fiscal year. So in individual cases, they could still have cash flow issues. But the cash flow after the first year, the cash flow issue is mitigated by the fact that they will start to get 100% of their cash going forward. And then obviously, when the shift is ended, they have extra cash, and it doesn't mean they don't need to borrow. For example, if they're using cash flow borrowing, they'll need to continue potentially to carry that loan, but then pay it off when that shift is restored. But there isn't an extra cash flow hardship every year that a shift is in place.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful. So they have an interest burden in this biennium for the cash flow that they had to borrow for if they needed to before, but there's no new borrowing per se. It's just the ongoing interest cost of whatever they did the first time around. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking, knowing your philosophies, Mr. Chair, that when you became the chair, we would pay the shift back. I remember when we had the 90-10 shift, and for those new members, of which there are a lot of new members on this committee, Representative Garofalo was always proposing to pay back the 10%, and why couldn't we, or at least get it up to 95-5 instead of 90-10, and now that you're the chair, Representative Garofalo, you can see it's always easier to talk than until you have to actually put forth and do it. But I want to underscore Representative Breinert's question, because I'm not clear yet on. Representative Kelly said that he does plan to budget and to pay that back, and there is the governor's way of doing it, and then there's this bill and so forth. But when we get to the budget book, I'm going to be curious to see exactly what the governor has done, and maybe I could ask the fiscal staff, how does what the governor is proposing, we don't have his bills yet, but we have the budget book, compare to what Representative Kelly is proposing? The way I understood the governor's plan was that that nothing's paid back this biennium, but starting in fiscal year 14, we would pay back 10% per year or more if the economy improved. How does that compare with what Representative Kelly is proposing?
I think, just first of all, before I go to staff, I think when you said 10%, you're using the number 10% of the remaining 20% that needs to be paid back.
Right.
So that would be, I heard some people say 2%. They're saying the same thing. What it is Representative Greiling is saying 10% of 20%, which is 2%. But Mr. Crowell, Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Kelly's bill, as it stands, restores 90% in 2014, so it's an immediate payback, similar to what was instituted last year with the paying it back for fiscal 12, immediately the full amount. And so the governor basically phases in the repayment. This would assume that the state would have to eliminate the shift or restore the 90-10 in fiscal 14.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Crow. That's what I am understanding. So it is exactly, does all need to be paid back then? It's not 10% per year or anything of the sort. It's just plain all has to be paid back. And so I'm really wondering, Representative Kelly, where you're going to get that money.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, I think as we go through the budgeting process, it's something that we're going to have to look at. It is a trade-off. It's a trade-off of $1.4 billion right now to help us balance the budget as opposed to looking at some very painful reductions. So I think as we go through the budgeting process, we'll have to find the ability to account for those costs.
And Representative Greiling, I think it's just from the chair's perspective, my thought process on this is I absolutely agree with Representative Kelly's language in the bill, and I agreed with your language in your bill last session when we called for the immediate payback, and that is before the legislature and the governor, whoever they are making additional promises in other areas of the budget, they need to pay the schools back first. That's the priority. So if we're going to be paying back, so if the economy continues to turn around and we're seeing good numbers and we're expecting things to get better, that if and when those dollars are available, the very first thing we should be doing is paying back the schools, not making additional promises when we're not even meeting the promises, we're not keeping the promises we're making right now. So that is the chair's perspective on it. But Representative Greiling, with regards to accounting for this, absolutely these dollars will be counted in the tails, just the same way they were in the last buy-in. It would be the exact same thing. That'd be the chair's intent, so Representative okay. Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that makes it very clear, then. There'll have to be a lot more budget cuts then in the tails for other areas than otherwise under the governor's proposal. And so I will look for that. I always think that the schools should be paid back. There have been some that have said, why pay it back at all? You know, just keep it out there. But we need to pay it back because it's like one more of our contingency funds that we can borrow from again. Plus, it's just wrong to owe this much. I always think it shouldn't be constitutional to have this much owed to the schools when we're supposed to balance our budget. But better minds than mine have told me that somehow it is. But it never makes sense to me. So I think we should pay it back right away, but I just question whether it's going to actually transpire. But we could, I guess, just take a look at this very same bill next time.
Yep, and Representative Greiling, I suspect that I may have said literally the exact same thing you did 1 year ago. So that's a possibility. So any other questions for members of the committee? Well, this is a public hearing, and members of the public are welcome to testify either for or against the bill. So at this time, we will take testimony. Is there anyone who wishes to testify either for or against House File 576? A quiet crowd today. Good. Okay. Well, Representative Kelly, do you have any closing comments?
No, I don't, Mr. Chair and members. I think research did a wonderful job. I appreciate the questions. And this is just our first step. So I appreciate your support.
Thank you. I think so. Okay. So the chair will request a roll call on House 576. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Kelly.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Ansel.
Yes.
Representative Bills.
Yes.
Representative Reinert.
Yes.
Representative Dabney, excused. Representative Dietrich.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Fabian.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Loon.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Myra.
Yes.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes. I didn't hear him either. That's what we go.
Could you speak louder? Sorry.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Slocum, excused. Representative Ward.
Yes.
Representative Woodard.
Yes.
Who says we can't be bipartisan? Unanimous vote support for Representative Kelly's bill. House File 576 is passed and as amended and referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
And the vote was 18 yeses, no noes, no abstentions. So, members, completes the agenda for today. Republican members will be meeting up in 5:37. If staff can try to line up a conference room for us. Is there any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a process question. The policy committee this morning, we had some discussion on not finishing the policy, and there was a bill, the mandate reduction bill that Representative Erickson has, going to GovOps and then coming to this committee. But there were some things that were needing some work, and she's going to work with others and get it in the shape that she wants when it comes to this committee. And then we had some concern from people like Representative Mariani and Representative Carlson that the policy committee didn't finish its work, but instead the policy work is going to be done in the finance committee. And so my question is, thinking now for this year, for the first time we have the policy deadlines after the finance deadline. When this committee concludes its work on March 25th, and that's our deadline, and you know, usually unless there's some emergency with getting dispensation from the Rules Committee, the Finance Committee is done meeting after the Finance Committee deadline. Will the Finance Committee continue meeting after the Finance Committee deadline for policy bills? Will they still keep coming to this committee to be put in the shape that they need to be as they travel along, or will at that point, will the policy committee's bills actually, and I guess this is also a question for Chair Erickson, will the policy committee bills then have to be going straight to the floor? In other words, will they stop coming to finance?
Sure. Representative Greiling, I can only speak for this committee. I can't speak for the other finance committees, but it is the intent of this chair that if we have policy bills moving forward that have financial policy dealing with them, that they will stop in this committee. Representative Greiling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and of course, as you and I know, almost any bill can be construed to have some finance implications, but if it was pure policy with absolutely none, then it wouldn't come here?
Representative Greiling, if it was pure policy with no financial policy involved, that you'd be correct.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Greiling.
So then, but if there is even the flicker of finance, which there was in the mandate reduction bill, more than a flicker, a few sparks or so, then this committee could keep meeting all the way through the policy committee deadline. And then, Mr. Chair, a corollary question to that. Where's the money going to come from to pay for the money that's in the policy bills that have a flicker of cost when this committee's done with finance?
Sure. Well, first of all, we have been blessed by the presence of a great federal official and an alumnus of this body that I want to point out to the crowd, and that is Congressman Keith Ellison is in the crowd. Thanks for joining us. And Congressman Ellison will be the first one to tell you the House still trumps the Senate. Isn't that right, Congressman?
Absolutely.
Good. Representative Greiling, you're asking kind of two separate questions there, and I'll take them separately. A policy bill does not have to spend money to have financial policy involved in it. So if it impacts how money is being spent, that still may come will still come to this committee. In it, however, if someone wished to spend additional resources as part of a policy bill, that would need to fall. That would have to be accounted for within the finance committee, the target of this committee. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, how about unfunded mandates or costs to local school districts? We're changing which ones have to pay how much property taxes to clean up after us, but that wouldn't have to be paid for at the state level. Would that? Would you still entertain bills like that from the policy committee coming through this committee?
Well, Representative Greiling, I'm trying to remember when the minority party offered amendments to the budget resolution on the House floor, how that was accounted for. Was there any changes to the budget resolution process to require local impact notes apply to the budget resolution? I don't recall that conversation. So it's the same rules that we had in place regarding it when you guys were in charge? Is my recollection correct?
Mr. Chair, then, so in other words, if it's something that the local school districts would pay for through policy, these could be heard in this committee and cleaned up and so forth, and it wouldn't be the policy committee that would have the final say.
Well, Representative Greiling, the final say always rests with the House floor, the Senate floor, and the governor's office. I'd be hesitant to agree with your assumption in that. But again, clearly, bills that have financial policy, bills that spend money, will come to this committee.
So, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Greiling.
Then, I shouldn't be planning escapades on my own in this time slot, even after the deadline.
Representative Greiling, you should never be planning escapades during session. Any other questions at all, Representative Greiling?
That's it.
Any other members of the committee have any questions for the chair? All right, with that, again, Republican members, 5:37, we'll find out the room we're going to meet in. This committee is adjourned. Thank you.